but we're much better than what we showed against them, and this is what we're going to show them tonight. No doubt in my head. Let's go, guys. Go.
Listening to the 90 Plus Podcast. Here's your hosts, Ben Righetti and Sebastian Pereira.
Hey guys, welcome to the 90 Plus Podcast, episode 28. Numbers are really starting to climb on up here. So again, as always, myself and Sebastian, my wonderful co-host Sebastian, we do thank you for all your support. You guys listening, interacting with us on Twitter at 90 Plus Podcast. We all really appreciate it. We've got a fun one today. We always love bringing on guests, and our first ever returning guest of the 90 Plus Podcast, the first one to make his to be on here twice, Jamin Moore. We'll hear from him in just a second. He covers the San Jose earthquakes from Quakes Epicenter down in California. So we'll hear from him in just a minute. Obviously, it's a big game this weekend for the Whitecaps. It was a bad loss last weekend that I think everyone's trying to forget about and move on from. But it's a big one against San Jose in terms of points. Obviously, it's the third real derby that, you know, that alone should make it a big one. But, you know, the fact that playoff implications are on the line, that's just, you know, the cherry on top of the cake. So we'll dive into that in just a moment here. But before we do, as always, Sebastian, my co-host, episode 28. Welcome. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for welcoming me in for the great intro, Ben. It was great, as always. But yeah, we're so excited, honestly, to preview the third wheel derby. I mean, we're lucky that we get to do another third wheel derby in less than a month here, and it's quite a turnaround for this Earthquakes team. So it's going to be nice to get Jamin's perspective in, and I guess with that, we'll welcome in Jamin here, Jamin Moore from Quakes Epicenter. Welcome again to the 90 Plus Podcast.
Ben, Sebastian, it's good to see you guys. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. You know, we had you on our little rest of season preview less than a month ago, and my, oh my, how much can change in a month's time. It's less than a month since we last talked to you. Obviously, when we did talk to you, you know, standings were looking a little bit different. The teams were looking a little bit different. You went as far as saying the season, well, you could almost write it off back then. Do you want to eat those words now, or should we save that for later on?
Well, I think I did drop a tidbit in terms of, you know, what the team was going to do, which was to hashtag play the kids. And they've done that. And guess what? We found out that the kids are actually pretty good. And certainly it has changed the fortunes of this team around in the short term. And now welcoming back, I think, some players from international break, we'll kind of see what goes on over these next four games. It'll be quite interesting to see, do we continue to see the improvements that the Earthquakes have shown so far for the rest of the season, particularly with this younger lineup now that veterans are making their way back in.
Yeah, it's been obviously San Jose. They went on a bit of a run. It's the four wins, a draw, and a loss in their last six. That's, you know, a record the Whitecaps would love to have boasted over their last six games. But, you know, we'll deal with that, you know, in down the line, hopefully. But yeah, it's like you said, the play the kids. You know, I think the Whitecaps almost kind of taken that on, and I think we may have stolen that from you, Jamin. But no, it's. It's an important message. You know, the Whitecaps have their own problems with squad rotation and bringing in the, you know, getting the youth involved and stuff. But for you guys, obviously, you've gone on this run of form. You've taken yourselves out from the basement of the standings. You guys are ahead of the Whitecaps. You're, you know, you're in, it's seventh, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Seventh right now,
holding a playoff spot, 3 points and one place ahead of the Whitecaps. It's a big one this weekend. What, you know, it's for you, especially San Jose, you guys have gone on that run. Suffered a little bit of a setback with the Portland loss, but regardless, you guys are still, you know, in a good a spot as you've been this year. So how are you feeling ahead of tomorrow's game against the Whitecaps?
Well, I'm feeling very good, so long as Matias Almeida, you know, stops tinkering with this lineup. it does feel like he's found, you know, I'm not going to say the right 11 because I do think it's a bit deeper than that, but he's really kind of found magic in the current, you know, starting, let's say 9 or 10 consistent players that have been in the lineups for these games. The big key for me was switching the goalkeeper. We mentioned it on the last episode, how Almeida had been very stubborn, continuing to play his goalkeeper from the first part of the season, Daniel Vega, and never, while giving a lot of other players, younger players, an opportunity here or there, never had given the goalkeeper an opportunity. In fact, when the media, when we asked Almeida, and I've asked him this question personally, and said, you know, why are the goalkeepers not getting an opportunity? He basically wrote them off as second-rate keepers and like they're not worth starting an MLS. Now, we all kind of knew better because we've seen JT Marcinkowski before. He's, first off, he's been a national team level keeper at the youth level for a very long time, played in CONCACAF championships, played in youth World Cups, and actually partnered with Jonathan Klinsmann, who's taken over the starting job at the LA Galaxy for, you know, a lot of that run in his late teens and early 20s. And we also got the chance to see him in 2018 when they decided to give him a shot when Andrew Tarbell fell on hard times for the team as well. And, you know, one of the things that's really kind of turned this around is not just the goalkeeping, it's the number of shots that he has faced on average is significantly less than what Daniel Vega has faced. Now, is that because of JT? Is that because of the defense stepping up in a better way? Hard to say, but I believe a lot of people do give a lot of credit to JT for his leadership back there. He's a very vocal goalkeeper. He seems to command the back line very well, particularly on the set pieces. Since JT has been in, I don't believe the Quakes have given up a set piece goal. That was something they gave up at a record pace with Daniel Vega. And so he's organizing, I think, on the set pieces a bit better. And all this translates to you can't give up five goals a game if you're not even giving up five, you know, shots on goal a game.
And I guess something that I want to kind of transition with you to that, now that you speak about the defense, how big has the emergence been of Tanner Beeson? I mean, this guy was virtually unknown at the start of the season for the Quakes and much of MLS as well. And he's kind of made a little bit of a late surge, not, I wouldn't say to contend with MLS Rookie of the Year, but he certainly put himself in the category to say, hey, I'm here, I'm starting for the Quakes, and I'm doing my job here. And he's been a big part of the turnaround here for the Quakes. So how big has it been to see him develop and also form a little bit of a partnership with Flo Youngworth at the back?
Absolutely huge. I've been a big fan of Tanner Beeson so far. So there's some things that people don't know about Tanner Beeson that I do feel are kind of interesting. First off, he's won national championships with Stanford. That has been a college in the U.S. that has won three straight national championships. I believe two of those, you know, Tanner Beeson was a part of. He was a captain on that team. They went after him, you know, primarily because he has that leadership. He has the ability to play at a center back. He can play at an outside back, left outside back position. Another position of need for the Quakes because Marcos Lopez, you know, has been going on international duty, and there was a chance that they were going to need Tanner to be able to fill in over there. The other thing that happened is the Quakes lost all their center backs except for two. You mentioned them, Flo Youngworth and Tanner Beeson. Tanner Beeson came out in his first two games against, the first one was LAFC, and he did not look very good in those games at all. In fact, LAFC picked on him. He arguably was at fault for three goals against LAFC in the last away game that they came back on, but the one before that. They've played twice on the road against LAFC in this condensed format. And so LAFC saw him back there for the game 6 games ago now, saw him back there and decided to they wanted to go at him because they were able to take advantage of him previous to that. And Tanner Beeson absolutely shut them down. He bossed Diego Rossi around. He bossed a number of those attackers around. Obviously, no Carlos Vela for them, you know, right now, but he was, you know, absolutely fantastic in the game. And I just feel like the confidence kind of fed itself. All of a sudden he realized I can hang with these guys. I can play at a pro level. And that kind of captaincy and leadership that you saw, you know, when you were watching him at Stanford it came out. The guy who hit 17 out of 17 penalties that he took for Stanford as their captain, you know, that guy is the one who has now showed up for the San Jose Earthquakes. And you're right. I think for me, he, you know, in a shortened season, at least, he ought to be in the running for Rookie of the Year. And a note, you know, another thing of note is that he's been getting starts most games now in front of Oswaldo Alanis, who Alanis is a world-class player. He's a player who has played in La Liga. He's a player who has been a big part of big teams in Mexico. And so, you know, for Tanner Beeson to be starting two of the last three games ahead of Alanis, now that Alanis is healthy again, you know, is actually a really big deal and shows a big vote of confidence in him from Matias Almeida.
Kind of piling on top of this, sort of the defensive talk here. Over the last six games, if not more, you guys have kind of been bouncing back and forth between the 4-1-4-1 and then the 4-2-3-1. I think towards the when we last talked to you, you guys had ran a couple of games straight, the 4-1-4-1. Do you think that, like you said, you know, center backs went out, you weren't really sure who was going to be able to step up, and then Tanner Beeson obviously announced himself, having the impact that he's done over the last few weeks. Do you think that the 4-2-3-1 compared to the 4-1-4-1 maybe may have helped some sort of ease in a little bit more support defensively, a little less responsibilities? Or do you think the 4-1-4-1 now is kind of the best way as a team to move forward?
Yeah, the I know that those are the formations that, like, Who Scored and Opta recorded for the games, but I'll tell you that there's really not much difference between the two. The only difference really between those is how high Jackson Ewell is getting up the pitch. So if he's playing further up the pitch and the Quakes are more offensive, they're more on the front foot, they've recorded the game as a 4-1-4-1. If he is sitting back and a little bit more defensive and the Quakes are trying to play on the counterattack and the opponent has a bit more possession, you're going to see him playing more alongside of Judson in that double pivot, and it's going to look more like that 4-2-3-1. So the formation only changes based upon the way that the game is playing out because of the man marking system. And it's you know, when the Quakes have more of the ball, Jackson Ewell's going to be getting up the pitch. Typically against the Whitecaps, the Quakes have had more of the ball. If they're able to break through Vancouver's press, that is, and once they break through the press, well, they didn't for the first half at MLS's back, and that's why that didn't go very well for that first half. But in the last game, you're right, they found a lot of joy in being able to break the press. And in fact, I think part of the thing that Tanner Beeson has been able to bring is some confidence on the ball. Marcos Lopez, when he's not been on international duty, has a lot of confidence on the ball. Tommy Thompson back there, Nick Lima. Those guys are all very confident on the ball. And the Quakes have been able to string together the passes and be able to beat presses that they were having a very hard time doing prior to six games ago. And when they weren't able to break the presses, they were turning the ball over. That's why one reason they were facing so many shots on target and giving up that many goals. It's not that Daniel Vega is a horrible shot stopper. He's actually considered to be a pretty good shot stopper. It's that the volume of shots that they were facing was just so high at that point. Now that they're breaking presses a bit better and they're getting more on the ball, you know, Jackson Ewell will press forward a bit higher. One of the reasons that he's doing that is because the Quakes don't have a true number 10 right now. Once Magnus Eriksson left the team, they've never really found like that true 10. What they've done instead is they've gone ahead and put Chris Wondolowski up top at the striker. They've asked Andy Rios, who was playing at the striker position, to drop a little bit deeper and to play like a defensive 10 underneath of Wando. And that's actually helped Andy Rios to be in better positions for goal scoring opportunities, because over those six games, he's also had four goals and an assist. And he's been a big reason why the Quakes also have improved, because he's found his form, his comfort playing under Chris Wondolowski, but not as deep as Magnus Eriksson was. And that's why Jackson Ewell often has to get higher to take advantage of that space behind the strikers.
And yeah, I remember you said last time in the last episode you were here that Andy Rios was a guy that not many Quakes fans wanted to see more of in what was then the future. And now we look at a guy who is completely rejuvenated, and he's taken on, like, I would say, sort of the Magnus Eriksson role. And he's found his flow in the team, and it's going to be interesting again to see how he does against the Whitecaps, because he has a pretty decent record against the Whitecaps. I think it's somewhere around 2 goals and an assist, I think, that he has against all time against the Whitecaps. So he's got a pretty good record in 3 games against the Whitecaps. I guess transitioning over to the Whitecaps, we're in a bit of a sticky situation coming off a really brutal loss against the Galaxy. And we were riding the form against the LAFC in the LAFC game, but it's going back to how this game is such a must-win game for both of these teams. We talked about it before recording this episode, just between us three, and it really is a must-win game. I mean, you look at the standings, the Quakes are sitting in 7th with 24 points, the Whitecaps with 21. Points per game is going to be a huge thing going into the playoffs. Who qualifies? The Whitecaps are at 1.11, the Quakes at 1.26. So a draw doesn't benefit either of these teams. It really is a must-win game, and virtually San Jose could clinch basically, or really cement their place in the playoffs if they get a win here tonight, or tomorrow night, I should say. If they get the 3 points, they could vault up as high as 5th if results go their way. So, yeah, it's what are you expecting from the Quakes tomorrow, Jamin? What do you think we'll see? We probably won't see the same as the last game due to the red cards and stuff. But what do you think we could see from this Quakes team tomorrow?
Well, you're absolutely right. The points per game just kind of changes the whole dynamic, doesn't it? Because right now the Quakes sitting at 24 points would be normally happy to go on the road and be able to get a point. But when you figure that it actually brings down the points per game number for either team, they're certainly going to have to be playing for a win in a road game. And, you know, as you guys know, actually in a stadium, the Quakes have never won a regular season game. They've never won in Providence Park. It'd be quite interesting for them to pick up their first win and it not even be against Portland.
2020.
So I'm sure you guys wouldn't want to see that, but yeah, absolutely. Matias Almeida doesn't, I mean, you can tell by the goal differential. Matias Almeida doesn't care about goal differential. It's never been a thing for him. A lot of his style is patterned after Marcelo Bielsa at Leeds United. He doesn't care about goal differential games. He's going to be pushing for the next goal every single time, you know, regardless of what the score line is. And when you get down, he's going to, you know, play very risky ball and potentially give up another goal. I envision a game that's going to play a bit more like what we saw at MLS's back, where I think both teams are going to need to go for it. And, you know, the question is going to be, you know, can the Quakes, you know, more successfully break the press that they're almost for sure going to be facing from Vancouver that they had trouble with in that first half at MLS's back? It's not going to shock me if this is another high scoring game between the two teams. Once the Quakes seem to be able to break the press, you know, what we've seen so far from Vancouver in these games is they play a fairly low block. They allow the Quakes to kind of hold the ball so long as it's not dangerous. You know, the big question is going to be, can the Quakes find the cracks to be able to get something out of that, or can they find goals on set pieces? They got, I thought, a little bit lucky with I think it was the second yellow, right? That ended up being rescinded later. So they got a little bit lucky in the red card plus the second yellow in the last game, I felt. I wasn't sure that either one was justly deserved, and maybe you guys felt the same. So, you know, they're going to have to play it probably in an 11v11 game, and you're going to have to find ways that they can do that. You know, one of the things that the Quakes seem to do a lot against Vancouver is take a lot of shots, but they're, for the most part, just not very high-quality shots. If you take a look at the expected goals on those shots, they're normally quite low. And, in fact, you know, the Quakes set a record last year for shots in a game, you know, against Vancouver, because they just let them shoot these low quality shots. And the score line was something really low. I can't remember exactly. I think it was like 2-1 or something like that.
3-1. Yeah.
Yeah. These were for the number of shots and such. It was actually kind of a low scoring game only because the goalkeeping was so good in that game. It just kind of managed the score line. I kind of just envisioned something a bit like that. Maybe the Quakes will get the ball a lot, but I also think on the road, they're going to have a difficult time breaking down Vancouver and finding the goals the same way they were able to in the home game.
That's fair. And you know what? Myself and Sebastian, we just recorded, we were guests on a different Whitecaps podcast, the third sub. So for our listeners, we'll promote that as basically as soon as we're done recording this with Jamin here. You know, go check that out once you guys are finished listening to this one. No, but we talked with the guys on there about, you know, the potential for this to be a little bit more kind of outgoing. You kind of touched on it there, of it being a bit more high scoring, high flying. And the Whitecaps don't tend to do well in those games. You know, in terms of a track meet, they tend to struggle. We did do our predictions, and we'll get into your predictions a little bit later in the show. But no, both myself and Sebastian, we both predicted ties. I went for a very Whitecap score of 0-0. And then Sebastian went for 1-1. But you know what? A 3-3 or a wacky 3-2 game or something like high scoring chances at both ends. And like you said, you know, last year, you know, we had, you know, we Max Rico, very solid job in net. Obviously, he's not in the team right now with his injury. We're on our, you know, our fourth string goalkeeper. We have to bring Evan Bush in over from Montreal. So, you know, a high flying track meet sort of game, it doesn't benefit the Whitecaps. And if it does fall into a sort of situation like that, I hate to say it, but I fancy San Jose's chances. So I wouldn't be surprised if Mark DeSantos goes a little bit more conservative and defensive. We've seen him over the last few weeks. He's kind of finally, for, you know, the love of God, he's found a formation that he seems content with in the 4-4-2. And it seems to be quite defensive. You know, there's not a whole lot always going forward. So, you know, if it does come to a sort of track meet like that, you know, I don't favor the Whitecaps' chances. And just one other thing, I'd like to get your opinion on. Is there anyone on the Whitecaps sort of side, you know, on where he'll be wearing white tomorrow? Is there anyone from the Whitecaps that either you're concerned about or you're, you know, I don't want to say scared because there's not really many people that can scare you from the Whitecaps, but who you can, if you're San Jose and you're, if you're Almeida, who are you concerned or, you know, taking notes on before kickoff tomorrow?
Well, I don't think the Quakes have necessarily seen the best of the Whitecaps from an attacking side this season.
The Whitecaps haven't seen the best of the Whitecaps in an attacking side.
There you go. So it depends on, I think, your attacking configuration. But the guy who's was able to capitalize on the Quake situation at MLS's back was on your left back side, right, Adnan, right? And so to me, he's the guy that they're going to take Nick Lima, who has been, by the way, we didn't talk about it yet, but he's been a shutdown outside back where he's been taking on the best player from every team. And it's just like he's rejuvenated himself playing right back again instead of left back and moving Tommy Thompson. They switched sides because of Marcos Lopez going to play for Peru. And so Tommy Thompson went over and played left back. So Nick Lima could stay on players like Christian Pavon. And he also had Adnan in that last game, and I thought did a pretty good job on him. So the question is, you know, can the Whitecaps find a way to be able to get him away from Nick Lima's type of coverage and find opportunities for him to get forward with the pace that he has? I think that's one. I'm not quite sure, you know, who's healthy on your striker side at the moment, but, you know, whoever it is potentially somebody that the Quakes haven't actually had to face yet. And, you know, you guys tell me, who should we be concerned about up top?
It's interesting that you bring up the left side as well, because it's been the talk of most of Whitecaps media of late, because we actually have Russell Tyrer. I don't know if that name is familiar, but he's usually the holding mid for the Whitecaps, and he's been playing at left mid for the past four games, I want to say.
The Blaise Matuidi role.
The Blaise Matuidi role. That's what he's being utilized in.
There you go. Okay.
And it's been a weird role for him. And it is kind of a decent role for Adnan, because it allows him to push up and really have a little bit more comfort going forward, because Tyrer can drop back. And since Tyrer's a more conservative defensive player, it allows Adnan to push forward. And we've seen Adnan kind of step it up a little bit more since that Earthquakes loss. He's been putting it a little bit more consistent performances and more of the type we're used to seeing from him. We've yet to see him really I guess, fulfill that full potential he can reach, much like we saw last year where he was just taking players on from that left back position, dribbling past them and all sorts of stuff. But he's definitely improved, I'd say, in the past couple games. And yeah, I guess in terms of who to look forward to watching for the Whitecaps, I'd say...
Hang on. I would like to bet $10 million that the words coming out of your mouth are Freddie Montero.
No, I'm not.
And
I'm
you, because you've changed him now. You were going to say that. If I didn't say anything,
No. Yeah. No, it's not Freddie Montero.
Christian Dahomer. Oh, wow. Would you look at that? The one Colombian podcast host goes to the two Colombian players.
It's the Colombian roots. I have to say,
How did I know?
I wonder why. Hey, you a big fan of Andy Rose because he got that England fan in the background or what?
No, we're thinking more. Who's an English player for the Whitecaps?
Only Andy Rose. That's what I'm...
John Thorington, 2011, taking it way, way back.
What a throwback.
Yeah.
also a former Earthquakes player, I think.
I think that might be right. Yeah.
Look at that. There we go.
Great reference. But Christian Dahomey, I think he's a guy who stepped up massively, especially in the LAFC game last week. He's the leading chance creator for the Whitecaps with 17. From a wide position. He's been huge in the key passes numbers as well. And he's a guy out wide. He mostly plays on the right side, and he's a guy that's very direct, very speedy. He can take players on. He can also make runs in behind. But what's interesting about him is he's almost given like a free role to just run in behind and do whatever he can to support Cavallini and Montero up top. What happens is that Montero kind of drops back into a bit of a number 10 position, and which in turn allows Dahomey to push up and make runs in behind. Meanwhile, you got the threat of Cavallini, who's been a little bit in form of late. He's got the two goals against LAFC. He's looked better in the past couple of games, I'd say, probably playing his best Whitecaps football. And he's in the box just lurking around. So if Dahomey can get to the byline and get some crosses in, you know, set up Cavallini, maybe take some shots of himself on his own. That's the only thing I'd say he needs to improve upon. I think he can cause some problems for the Quakes. But again, we see flashes of Dahomey at times, and then we don't see the consistency, which is something Ben and I have talked a lot about.
A lot. The last couple
of, yeah, like a lot. Like we even talked about it earlier on the third sub episode. So for the listeners, you guys can check that out. But that's what I think for in terms of dangerous players for the Whitecaps.
One other dangerous player who would have been dangerous if he were still with the team, Robbie Earnshaw, great striker, English. just putting that out there, you know. It was past his prime for sure when he came to BC Place for about 3 appearances, which seems like ages ago, but you know, regardless, I cling on to the little that we have.
Yeah, one of the areas that I think the Quakes potentially are susceptible, you mentioned the right side being an area of strength right now for the Whitecaps, would be defensively on the left side of the Earthquakes. The way that things have gone over there, and it depends on whether Marcos Lopez will be integrated back into the starting lineup, but Tommy Thompson's not the strongest defender, you know, on the planet. He's not back there because that's his forte. And also on that side is Carlos Fierro, who at times has been suspect. Now his defense has been pretty good as of late, but there has been times he's been shaky, you know, throughout various points of the season. And Portland was able to take advantage of that side a little bit as well. So to me, it's going to be a big question if the strength, you know, of the attack, you know, coming from Vancouver is going to be on their right. You know, can the Quakes do what they need to do to be able to hold that side while still watching Adnan, you know, over on the left side of the Whitecaps?
And I think a big area of concern for the Whitecaps, especially of late, even in games that they won, they beat RSL 2-1 two weekends ago already, Sebastian? It was 3 games ago.
It was a week game. It was about, yeah, I think it was like 2 weeks ago on Saturday. It's 2 weeks ago.
So they beat RSL apparently 2 weeks ago. And you know what, the Whitecaps, they didn't look good. Like it was 3 points, but you know, me and Sebastian recorded the day after, and you know, the way we were talking and acting and feeling about it, you know, it would have, if you didn't know the score, it would have sounded like we lost, you know. So I think a big part of that was in the midfield, the center of the park in the midfield, especially when we run the 4-4-2. Typically, a lot of MLS teams, and San Jose is no exception, They like to load up the center of the park with three players, whether it's a 4-3-3, 4-1-4-1, 4-2-3-1, whatever it may be. And I think, you know, three players is obviously always going to overwhelm two. And especially with the Whitecaps, you know, they don't always seem to be on the same page sometimes or whatever. So, you know, the three men in the midfield compared to the two that I'm, you know, I think it's pretty safe to say it's going to be a 4-4-2 from Mark Dos Santos and the Whitecaps tomorrow. So, the two-man midfield versus the three, how do you kind of see that battle going in the center of the park?
Well, because of the man marking, it depends on kind of where the Quakes win the ball and who wins it and, you know, where they're at. One of the things that they're very fluid at offensively is being able to move players around to anywhere. They'll make runs out of the deep part of the back. They like to play through the wings, but they'll underlap, they'll overlap the outside backs. Because they're playing with two strikers themselves with Rios and Wando, you know, they will, you know, split and go different directions and all kinds of such. So sometimes what seems like the Quakes should have a numerical advantage in the middle of the pitch, they don't necessarily do all the time. But, a lot of it depends on who they start in different spots. If Alanis is in the left center back position, Alanis is a player who they trust to be able to go forward, combine with Judson, combine with Ewell, and create overloads in different situations. If that's not going to be him, then they might be a little bit more conservative in some of those approaches. So I think sometimes you'll see that the overloads will exist. There's going to be other times where sometimes the Quakes will get overrun in the middle of the pitch as well, just because the way that they're getting spread out defensively, sometimes they're not able to take advantage of transitions once they get the ball again. LAFC was a team that was able to dominate them because of their counter press. They were able to isolate players like Jackson Ewell, force them to turn the ball over because they really didn't give them very many options. This hasn't been a problem so far. This season against the Whitecaps, it's unlikely to be a big problem tomorrow. But if Mark Dos Santos is able to somehow take advantage and spread the Quakes out defensively a bit more than he has in previous games, then, you know, you may not face as much of the overload problem in the middle.
It seems like we'll be getting a pretty even battle in midfield, obviously, because of what you just mentioned there, Jamie. But it's also interesting to know your point, the fact that if Andy Rios does get to start tomorrow, he will be pushing up further upfield. He won't be the most defensive of 10s. Per se, and it will open up space for sure for both teams to play in the midfield, and it's going to be interesting to watch how that all unfolds, especially with a player like Judson, who's I think he's really shown his better qualities in the past month or so for the Quakes. Wouldn't you say so? I think he's been a big part of the success, right?
Well, I think the Whitecaps saw the worst of Judson in that game there, where he showed that he can run basically a 100-yard dash in about 10 seconds, but unfortunately put the ball in the back of his own net. So you've seen how much ground he can cover. I like to say that he covers more ground than any other defensive mid in MLS. I'm pretty certain that's true because I've done a lot of charts that demonstrate his coverage areas as compared to other defensive midfielders, and I haven't found one yet, including Diego Chara. He covers about 67% more ground than Diego Chara does, to give you a sense for how much he runs. He comes from second division in Brazil, where they play like 70 game, you know, seasons. So he's actually used to this schedule. He told us this week in a very rare interview that was translated from Spanish, because he actually speaks Portuguese. He's learned Spanish, and because a lot of the players on the Quakes are Latino, and he's learned Spanish well enough to, so now he can do an interview and get it translated from Spanish to English. And one of the things he told us is that it feels much like he's back in Brazil right now with this compressed schedule. He's very used to this playing games every 3-4 days type schedule from his time in Brazil. He just runs and runs and runs. And he never seems to lose gas. The guy, everyone says that he's got the biggest motor that they've ever seen in the league who's been around him. He's been excellent for this team. Another player who does, you mentioned Andy Rios, another player who's able to go 90 plus minutes every single game has been Andy Rios. And even when he wasn't in form, We asked Matias Almeida, why is Andy continuing to get all this playing time? He hasn't gotten a goal in several games and such. And Almeida's like, yeah, but he runs. I mean, that was his answer. And so, you know, that's what Almeida was looking for, was people in this compressed schedule who could go the distance and play 90 plus minutes and play it strong. And the two guys who can do that in the center for the Quakes have been Judson and Andy Rios.
Well, you touched on Judson there, and like you said, the busy schedule, we're sort of used to that. For the Whitecaps, on the other hand, it's, you know, we went through a stage of 5 games in 16 days. It was a lot, and you could see at the end, you know, we played the Galaxy and guys were tired. There wasn't maybe, you know, enough or proper squad rotation, you know, between even substitutes coming on 20 minutes later than they should and not having nearly as much impact in the game as I think a lot of people would have liked them to have. It's been a nearly identical, like pretty similar starting 11 over that 5-game stretch for good and for bad. And, you know, guys, you could just see in the Galaxy game, you know, down in Carson, it's a big field. There was damn near no midfield on from either side, even, you know, Galaxy, they were in a similar stage of playing quite a, I don't know the exact number for them, but they were in the middle of a bit of a long stretch as well of games in a short amount of time. And yeah, it was slow, and the genuinely huge, massive holes in the middle of the field. And I know that, like I said, Carson, the stadium down in Carson, the field is, you know, I don't say a lot bigger, but I think it's, you know, no, it was definitely noticeable. And even if it's not, it definitely seemed like it on last weekend against the Galaxy. For San Jose's perspective, you know, they're for the rest of the season, they're in pretty similar spots to the Whitecaps. Game tomorrow. Midweek game, and then one of the weekends, then the decision day on the Sunday, the 8th. Do you, you know, like you said, every team at this point of the season has gone through this right now, where it's, you know, the season's coming down, you know, last few games, everyone's, you know, MLS is throwing, you know, big, rapid, you know, compact schedules to every team. And how do you think, you know, San Jose has dealt with the last little bit of riding, sort of being tired and player rotation? And then moving on from that, are you going to continue to see that? What's going to be different for the next 4 games to close out the year?
You know, the last time that the Quakes were able to get kind of a full week break is really when things started to turn around for them. The team does play at their best based upon their level of fitness. And one of the things that Almeida has consistently been saying is that, hey, we're basically playing a game. We're getting a down day. We're practicing for a day. And sometimes we weren't even practicing for a day because of the smoke and everything that was preventing the players from having adequate practices. And so a lot of times they were just doing chalk talks, and then they would go in and out and they'd play the next game. And the thing that was really affecting the Quakes was not just, you know, some of the defensive woes, but it was just the overall fitness is not what's needed in order to be able to run this aggressive, you know, man-marking style that they run. And so I do feel like having a week rest will help a lot of the players be able to get that kind of reset. But at the same time, for Almeida, he actually uses it to improve the fitness. So while they're getting a reset, he has a very specific structure that he likes to run in preseason that gets the players from wherever they're at to another level of fitness. He puts a lot of emphasis in this because he knows his style requires it. I actually expect the Quakes will be able to run all over the place, you know, for the next 4 games. The problem for me is that last season, once there was enough tape on them, you know, teams started to figure them out, and they went and they lost, you know, basically 7 of their last 9 games, you know, at the very end of the season there. And so, and really kind of ended the season just on like a big long losing streak. And my concern with this team is I don't know if they can really close out the season. They've got a pretty rough schedule still ahead of them. You know, I think Vancouver on the road in Providence Park is going to pose maybe more of a challenge than Quakes fans think it's going to be quite honest. I think it is going to feel like it's the third time that these teams have met this year, right? They've already seen the best.
I mean, it's the third real derby.
It's the third real derby. It's the third game. And so, you know, now the question is going to be, can the Quakes overcome this kind of end of season issue that they had last year? They've got to be the fittest team on the field. they've got to be able to keep it tight defensively. And, you know, if they can do those things, the bigger question is, are they going to be able to find ways to put the ball in the back of the net? Chris Wondolowski hasn't scored in a very long time. And Andy Rios has picked some of that up, but, you know, can Andy Rios continue that type of pace? We haven't seen it yet. And they've had 15 guys score this season. The goals are getting really spread out, but that also means there's no real consistency as to where they're coming from. And so in the next four games, they're going to have to continue the type of defensive affairs that they've had over the last few games that have been successful for them. But now they're going to need to find some consistency of putting the ball in the back of the net against teams that I think they're going to find difficulty doing that with.
And just shifting over here for the listeners to the Whitecaps side, just a couple of lineup notes for you guys. It looks like David Milinkovic won't be medically cleared to play for the Whitecaps this weekend. Apparently it's a non-COVID related illness, and he is back in Vancouver to treat that. But again, a little bit of a big miss off the bench or starting on the left wing there for the Whitecaps. So we don't know exactly what and how long Milinkovic will be out for the Whitecaps. He's obviously been a little bit of a big part ever since MLS's back kind of ended, I'd say.
Yeah.
And we'll most likely see the 4-4-2 for the Whitecaps. Someone we'll probably see come into the lineup will be Johnny Obikel, who was obviously suspended for the LA Galaxy game, and he did pretty good in the LAFC game. He formed a solid partnership with Leonard Owusu in the middle. And as we said before, it's going to be interesting to watch that midfield battle. Obviously, the three-man Quakes midfield with the highly energetic Juicen, as well as Jackson Ewell, someone who's very underrated, in my opinion, in this league. It's going to be a good battle in midfield. Hopefully, we see the likes of Cavallini, Montero, and Dahomey combine again. But kind of just shifting over here to predictions as well. Ben and I, as we said before, we were able to be a part of the third sub pod that is up now. So you guys can go check that after this episode. We made predictions on there, and we're going to stay true to our predictions that we made on there. So I went with a 1-1 draw. The Whitecaps have not drawn at all this season, believe it or not. They have a big fat zero in the draw category. So I'm saying it's going to be
due.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd hope so. God.
With four games left in the season, like, we're bound to get a draw at least. I hope so. I want to see one. I think it's going to be a close game. I can't see a situation where this game kind of explodes and they can feature a lot of goals. Like, we maybe see another one of those MLS's back encounters. I think it's kind of going to go like a little bit quiet. It's going to be kind of like the first half of that of the latest third wheel derby we saw at Earthquake Stadium, where it was kind of like there wasn't like too many chances, but there were like some small bits where there were both teams looked pretty solid. I think I'm going with the 1-1 draw. I think it'll be a little bit of a rough, scrappy game, and we'll see how it goes. Hopefully it's better than that, but that's my prediction.
I'm obviously same with Seb. I'm sticking true to what I said on the third sub. Not only are the Whitecaps going to get their first draw, I was going to say win, but let's be honest. Not only going to get their first draw of the season, they're going to get their first clean sheet in 15 games. It's going to be a 0-0 tie, blanks across the board. You know, I think this four, as Sebastian said it there, he doesn't think it's going to be a big explosive sort of track meet. Like Sam said on the third sub podcast, go check that out. I do think that the 4-4-2, it doesn't have the potential to be high-flying and electric. It's just, it's the most basic formation and basic, you know, if you stay true to the formation, basic games aren't typically, you know, 3-2, 3-3, 4-3, whatever, you know, wacky score you want to call it. Because a 4-3 scoreline in the third row derby would just be absolutely ridiculous.
It's what we dream of.
I'm sticking to the 0-0. I think it's going to be just, unfortunately for Whitecaps fans, we are getting quite used to this. Slow, sluggish, look good at times, but can't quite piece it all together. And I think on the other side, you know, the two men in the midfield, I'm presuming it's going to be Bikel and Owusu in the center of the park. Very defensive players. I mean, we saw what they did against Portland for, you know, 85 minutes, they looked pretty solid on defense. And literally apart from that one set piece, I think it's going to be quite a similar game to that, where if there is going to be a goal, it's going to come off of a mistake or and some dodgy refereeing. Yeah, like it's going to be, it's not going to be, you know, a beautiful 30 pass move with, you know, everything fluttered in there. It's I just don't see that happening tomorrow. So 0-0, as boring as it may sound, that's what I'm going with. Jamin, how are you feeling for tomorrow? What's your prediction looking like?
Well, the Quakes are facing their biggest nemesis in MLS in Providence Park. Their second biggest nemesis, I'm pretty sure, is just any turf field at all. So, you know, to me, it's not a place that they're likely to find a win. But I actually think it's going to be a bit more up and down. I think it'll be a 2-2 game. Again, I think the both teams are highly motivated to get 3 points. So when someone gets that first goal, I think you're going to see whatever plan the two teams have put together start to come apart pretty quickly and the game open up. When it opens up, you know, anything can kind of happen in these up and down MLS type games, and particularly Providence Park. It's a little bit of a tighter field. And with the turf, sometimes teams can get up and down pretty quickly. Some of those games can be quite entertaining. I kind of expect to see an entertaining 2-2 draw tomorrow. So I'm going to go with you guys on the prediction of the draw. I just think we're going to see a bit more offensive punch. I also don't think that the Quakes can have fully solved all the different things that they need to in order to maintain these type of 0-0 games. They have 3 clean sheets in their last 4 games. I'm sorry, I just can't see that continuing for them. As much, I'm sure, as a 0-0 draw sounds good to you guys, I think the Quakes fans would be bored out of their mind with another 0-0 draw, since that's how they finished with the Seattle Sounders.
So all week. 3 of us going for the draw.
Wow. All right. Well, you know, there's 3 of us that went for the draw as well on third sub. Alex was the only one who went for the Whitecaps win. So no one between, you know, the 5 of us between us, no one's going for a San Jose win. So optimism, at least on the Whitecaps perspective. And I think with that, our predictions, we usually wrap up there. And I think that's what we're going to do here. Jamin, thank you so much again. Our first ever repeat guest on the 90 Plus podcast.
I am honored.
As a reason we invited you back. We loved having you on before. I'm sure you're going to be back again. As always, we've enjoyed the chat with you. To our listeners, this is episode 28. You can find us on social media. Our Twitters are at 90 Plus Podcast. From there, you can find myself and Sebastian's individual accounts. He's at SebastianP74. I'm at Rigetti Ben. Like I said, the podcast is at 90 Plus Podcast. Jamin, I'm last second scrambling here for yours. Hang on, I'll get it. It is at J Moore Quakes. There we go. JMOORE Quakes, contributor for the Quakes Epicenter. Again, as always, we thank you for coming on. To our listeners, we thank you for listening. Fingers crossed that, you know, maybe for our own sakes, it's going to be a draw. So, you know, we could all be right. But regardless, in terms of the standing, I think 3 points either way will make things a little bit more interesting. So that's episode 28. We thank you all for listening. Jamin and Sebastian, as always, we thank you for joining us here on the 90 Plus Podcast. And from there, until next time.